We're kind of winding down with our draft preparations, finishing up with some of the pre-draft visits here today. Got 8 players in here today, so we're kind of moving along as a part of that process. A couple things quickly. Just 2 things. So congrats to the Charitable Foundation marathon runners, one of whom was our college director, Monty Austin Ford, who participated yesterday. He finished in less than 4 hours, so quite an accomplishment. But, I mean, Monty deserves a lot of credit this time of the year. I mean, my opinion, as good as anybody in the league in his position, what he does for our organization, for our team as a part of this process. He invests a significant amount of time. His staff, I mean, Brian Smith, James Ledford, DeJuan Daniels, our guys do a great job. They invest a lot of time. We ask a lot of them, and a lot of their job kind of is not recognized, but they're an integral part of what we do in terms of putting this process here together. So certainly be remiss if I didn't mention that group. You know, we're excited the opportunity here next week to add to our team and hopefully improve our team. We're making progress, second day of the offseason program. So a lot of work to do, long way to go. But, you know, we're getting there, and we're excited about adding players to our team here next week. So, you know, open it up to some questions and go from there.
You got no first or second round picks. Obviously, 2 possibilities of getting up that high with Butler and Garoppolo. Just with Garoppolo, is he strictly not for sale, or
how? Yeah. I'd say to answer your question, Jeff, anything that we do, we're always going to do what we think is in the best interest of our football team, and that's how we approach it. That's not going to change. So whatever you think is best for our team for 2017, for that season, then that's what we'll do. However that manifests itself, not exactly sure, but that's where the focus is trying to put together the best team possible for the 2017 season. However that comes about, then, you know, we'll take it as it comes.
Same type of response from Butler, if the Saints don't call him?
Yeah, our focus and goal is to put together the best team possible, and however we're going to improve our team or whatever players we think are going to help our team for the 2017 season, then that's what we're going to do. So,
are you guys planning on having Malcolm back this year? Is he in your plans, or are you expecting him to be elsewhere next year?
Right now, we're focused on getting ready for the draft. That's where the focus is. I mean, I don't anticipate that many transactions here between now and next Thursday or Friday. Could that change? I mean, look, it's National Football League. I mean, things can change in a heartbeat. So our focus is on getting ready for the draft and trying to put together the best team possible. I mean, long way to go. I mean, where we are today is probably going to be a lot different than where we are in September whenever we play, like whoever that is. So a long way to go, a lot of work to do. But right now the focus is on getting ready for next week and doing the best job we can with that opportunity.
Does his status, the uncertainty of it, affect your draft plans at all?
Our philosophy on the draft is to add good football players to our team, however we do that. So whoever those players are, whatever positions they play, that's always been the most important thing for us, and that's not going to change.
Do you have multiple scenarios, Nick, or have you come up with multiple scenarios, whether or not Malcolm is here, whether he stays, whether he goes? Has that been all part of the process also?
I mean, really, it's no different than what I just said. I mean, our focus is trying to put together the best team we possibly can. So, I mean, right now we're at 64, 65 players, however many players we have on our team. So our goal is to put the best team together for 2017, however that manifests itself. I mean, there's a lot that's going to change between now and then. I mean, like there is for a lot of teams. So we're no different.
With no picks until the third round, does that change anything for you and your team's preparation heading into this draft?
It's a good question. Realistically, it does not, because really what you want to do, you want to know the players top to bottom. So wherever the players are projected to pick or wherever you think they're going to pick, you don't not evaluate a player or not go through your process of the player just because, like, well, we don't think he's going to be there when we pick. Like, really, none of us know when we're going to pick at this point. So we have to be prepared. So that's why our job is to kind of know top to bottom each position as thoroughly as we possibly can, which is what we do. Like, you know, as an example, when you go to a school that has multiple prospects, you don't just evaluate 2 or 3 prospects because you think they're going to be there when you pick or whenever you think that is. So we go through our process top to bottom. We spend as much time as we normally do, because really we're trying to gather as much information we can on the player and build a composite, because really you never know when that information is going to become useful for you. It could be further on down the road when you have player acquisition or if a player ends up on your team. So our philosophy really hasn't changed. We evaluate the players, we assign the grades to the players, and then however the draft ends up unfolding, then we deal with it as it comes.
Nick, on that last point, how valuable was the work you had done when players were coming out of college and the acquisitions you made the last couple of years with Rowe, Van Noy, Gilmore, Cooks, Healy?
It's a great question, Bob, and it's a great resource. We rely a lot on that information, which is why, you know, even though the college process you may be going through and think, well, it's not really integral to this particular player, well, at some point it's going to be, because our first, when we build our database, we have a database of just about every player that's in the league. So as soon as they go from college to pro, all that information transfers over from the college system. So we have all the interviews, all the workouts, all of our grades, all of our background information that we have. So we kind of go back and say, okay, let's look at that information. What do we say coming out? What was the information like? Then we may talk to other players or other people throughout the league. We may talk to our players that may have been a teammate with them, whether it's in college or at that existing team. So it really, you never know when that information is going to be useful. I mean, I would say going to the Ely situation, he was a player that we actually worked out and we visited here to Foxborough. So we had some, I would say, baseline understanding. Now, when a player is with another team and another system, like, we can't control that. We can take the information that we have and say, okay, here's what we thought about the player. Here's what we thought about his football intelligence, et cetera, whatever the case may be. And the same would apply to the Cook situation. I mean, probably not too many people in here have been to Corvallis, Oregon, but we had people that were up there, that went up there, that worked the player out, spent time with them. So you're building this reservoir of information. You never really know when you're going to utilize it, but it's there, which is why you want to make sure that it's accurate and that it's right. And that's part of our job, and that's kind of where the college scouts and that process really comes into play, and it's critically important.
So what about Gilmore? It's been a while since you guys had spent that kind of money on another team's free agent. What is it about Gilmore that you guys like so much?
Yeah, I mean, he's a good football player. You know, we think he has an opportunity to be a good player in our system. We haven't worked with the player, but we like the player coming out of college. We saw him twice a year, so, you know, we felt good about the player. So we went ahead and made the decision that we felt was best for our team, so that's why we did what we did.
Does that time you spend give you an idea of a player's aptitude? For example, if a guy might not have been used in a scheme that best suited his skills and his intelligence, that aids in your evaluation judgment that you could fit here?
Sure. You have to evaluate the actual physical skill set of what they were asked to do within the confines of their system, knowing that it may be different relative to your system, what you're going to ask that player to do. It's no different than what you're looking at these players in college. I mean, I would say the majority of the time, 85-90% of the time, what they've actually been asked to do or the system that they played doesn't necessarily translate over into our system. So there's a projection element. Regardless, the difference between college and pro players is you have a little bit more of a body of work that you've seen against good people. It's not you're watching a Division I player play against, you know, 1AA or, you know, FBA. I mean, so there's a difference there. When you actually see a guy play competitively against NFL players and receivers, you sort of have a better idea of how their physical skill set matches up. Then you have to be able to take the scheme and then not cast that aside, because unless it's the same system, it's going to be different what you're going to ask that player to do.
Nick, because of the depth of pass rusher in this draft, could it be a situation where you can get someone in the third round who might have gone maybe a round higher in a previous year?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think we're worried about like a guy like what happened in a previous year. I think we evaluate the player, we grade the player. Here's what we think his role would be for us. We assign the value to the player. And where they get picked, they get picked. So, like, we really can't control, like, what happened a year before. Maybe they'd get drafted earlier. Like, in the end, it doesn't really have any bearing or relevance to this year. What we focus on is this year and how that player will project into our system based on our grade. We assign a value. And, look, in the end, there's a projection element regardless of the player who you're talking about. Like, top of the draft, bottom, middle of the draft, bottom of the draft. So you just try to have to take the information, take the evaluation of what you think the player is going to be, project it into your system, and then pick the players accordingly.
Do you view the pass rushers as a particularly deep position in this draft?
I mean, look, I think it's a good draft regardless. I mean, pick a position. I mean, everybody, you know, says, well, you know, this position, that position. I mean, look, there's good football players top to bottom, I would say, across positions. So our job is to find the ones that fit for us. And the reality is, look, there's some players that fit, there's some players that don't. I mean, look, in the end, we end up with 50 to 75 players that we would draft from top to bottom. I mean, that's a small number, but that's where we end up. I mean, so that's the decision what you have to make. I mean, it's a small pool, but I mean, that's kind of, that's our process. And we have to make the decisions that are best for our team, not necessarily what the player is going to do for somebody else. I mean, that's all we can really do and can control.
Is there a balance between fit and potential that you're striking when you're looking at a player?
Specifically, I mean,
for a position. Like, if you see a player that fits into what you do specifically and you like, this guy could really work well based on what we've seen on him and tape and bring him in interview process, based on maybe he's not a great fit, but the potential that he brings to the team over, you know, might supersede that.
You have to balance that off, because even if a player has a lot of experience, they're still going to be making an adjustment from where they've been playing or what they've been doing to what we're going to ask them to do. So how long is that going to take? Maybe that goes back to their intangibles, their football makeup, their ability to work, the ability to take coaching, the ability to improve, make corrections, get better. I mean, here's the reality with college football. The foundation level for a lot of these players is ground zero. So, I mean, you have players that honestly, like, you ask them, what is a Mike linebacker? Who's the Sam linebacker? And they don't know what that means, okay? Or what's the defensive front? Is it an over? Is it an under? Well, it's numerically based. So it's very simplified, which, okay, so you take that information. Maybe the kid he's a smart kid. He works hard. He's competitive. You watch him play. He's got a good playing style. Okay, but his foundation is low. Okay, how long is it going to take him for where these traits may be able to manifest themselves on the field, and how quickly that happens? So the curve is different for different players, and some players maybe think it's not going to take as long. It takes longer than you think. So there's a balancing act, and you just try to make the best assessment that you can with the information that you have currently, and then be able to fast forward a little bit and see how long is it going to take. Is it going to take a year? Is it going to take 2 years? But really, from the time that we draft the player, that we bring him into our building, let's call it May, by, I would say, training camp of the following year, you should have some idea of that player's progress and, like, ultimately what he's going to be. Now, can he get better? Sure, he can get better. But that gives him a full cycle of in-season, off-season training, training camp. Okay, you know, what do you have? Hopefully you'll be able to make some assessment. That's part of our job, is to be able to assess the player. The ability, can he get better? Is this about what it is? Are we satisfied with that? Or whatever the case may be.
Looking league wide here, offensive linemen are often taken in the first round because they're supposed to be safer picks, easier to project. But in the last several years, there have been offensive linemen taken pretty high that have not worked out for whatever reason. Is that a position that's becoming tougher to project from college to pros?
In some respects, I would say yes, because of, I would say, a few things. What they're asked to do and how they play. I mean, we talked about this, I want to say, last year. I mean, there's some players that have been in a three-point stance. So, I mean, you're starting, you know, from ground level, running game. Okay, you're going to have to be able to come off the ball, good pad level, good hand placement, good explosiveness, roll your hips, be able to adjust and move. Some of the players have never been asked to do that. I mean, they've basically been asked to stand there in a stance, wait for the play call or whatever the word is, run a play, okay, sprint to the line, do it again. Okay, it's very successful and it's very productive in college football. There's a lot of good offenses, but that's just not NFL football. That's not reality. So you have to be able to, and that's where, with that position in particular, maybe you have to go see that player and ask him to do things that you're going to ask him to do. You know, when Dante goes out and works a player out, he can actually put them in a position where, okay, I want you to do this, put your hand here. It's something as simple as your stance. You know, some guys can't even get in a stance, or they get in a stance and you're looking at them going, like, wait a second, like, my daughter can probably do that. So you're basically starting from ground zero, so you have to establish their foundation. Really, a lot of it is just fundamental-based and technique-based. So, look, I'm not saying there's no good offensive linemen. That's not what I'm saying. But there's things that they're going to be asked to do that they just haven't been asked to do before. So how quickly can they assimilate into your techniques and what you're going to ask them to do? You have to be able to make that determination.
When you say 50 to 75 players, is that a standard range for you guys?
And I'd say it varies year to year, but, like, I would say our draft board is smaller than most. And it's just we are trying to find players that we feel comfortable with on all levels that we would actually draft. Not they're going to get drafted. I mean, like, 300 players or whatever it is are going to get drafted. It's players that we would draft that actually we would feel comfortable with in our program in some capacity. And there's going to be some players that aren't drafted that we're going to add to our team, like the Jonathan Joneses, the Brandon Boldens, the David Andrews, who could they have been drafted? Sure, absolutely. They didn't get drafted for whatever reason, but that's going to be another pool of players that have come into our program, I would say, and, you know, some have had some more success than others. So you have kind of a couple different groups. Here's the draft group. Here's the undrafted group. We spent a lot of time on the players that we maybe think are not going to get drafted. I mean, look, they could get drafted, but if they don't get drafted, we definitely would want to work with that player because of X, Y, and Z. So we try to identify those. Andrews definitely fell into that category. Brandon Bolden was another player that fell into that category. Jonathan Jones fell into that category. So there's draft picks. They're important. Okay, undrafted players, they're equally as important. And there's going to be other team building opportunities to add players to your team throughout the league that we're not even talking about right now. Like, I don't even know who those guys are, Jeff, but, I mean, they're going to be some of them that actually show up. So,
Nick, when you look at the big picture in terms of player acquisition, how do you balance drafting a rookie where you have him for maybe 4 or 5 years versus in free agency where you may have a guy, or via trade especially, I guess, where you may have a guy for only a couple of years, but you know what he is. You're eliminating that, in some ways, that projection aspect that you talked about a little bit earlier. Is there one that's more valuable than the other?
Phil, I wouldn't say there's one more valuable than the other. I think you kind of have to look at each individual situation on its own merits, take the information that you have, and then make a decision. You know, things change, things happen quickly. Like, we didn't go into the season and say, okay, we're going to trade for Kyle Van Noy last year, midway through the year. It was an opportunity that presented itself. We talked about it, we made a quick decision, and then we went ahead and made the transaction. So a lot of it is just based on player availability, like whether or not there's actually going to be players that are actually tradable. I mean, that's up to the team. Like, if you want to trade for a guy, but the team's not willing to trade, well, we're wasting a lot of time. So we're always looking at various avenues, whether it's trade potential. Obviously, the draft is the draft, but then there's going to be other opportunities in the preseason when we're evaluating basically 85 to 90 players on each roster that we know 35, 40 of them are going to be released. So there may be some other opportunities to add to your team at some point. So the team building exercise is very fluid. This is a very finite point in time. Like, we know where we are today. We know kind of what next week entails. But that's not the end of it. Then we kind of transition into the next phase of it, and there's going to be players that are added to teams after the draft because a team hasn't necessarily maybe filled a need that they had identified, or there's going to be players drafted onto teams, so it's going to force another player off the roster. So do we know who those players are? No, but we try to make some projection. Okay, if A happens, maybe B happens. So it's very fluid. It's very ongoing. There's a lot of communication. There's a lot of dialogue on a daily basis. And even though the draft is over, it's not like, okay, we flip the page, close the books, and let's go to the golf course and have a nice day. Like, that's not how it works. It's not reality. So we just kind of transition into the next phase.
When you made the Cooks trade, are you looking that far out, okay, these players might be available at 32, or was it too early at that point to think about what player you could take rather than bringing in Cooks?
Yeah, it's probably too early because at that point, what's that, March? So, I mean, you've gone through – you have a lot of information, but you're still kind of going through the next phase of your process. You haven't done some of your pre-draft visits. Maybe you haven't done some of your workouts. You're kind of the pro day circuit is sort of starting. So it's probably a little bit early at that point. I think you're looking at a player. Okay, how do we feel about the player? Okay, here's what the compensation is involved. You're either comfortable or not comfortable making a decision. So if you want to do it, you go ahead and do it. If you don't, you don't.
Will you pick up his option?
Pardon me?
Will you pick up his option?
Anything contractual. I mean, we haven't commented on anybody's contract situation, so – you know, we'll make that decision when we feel the time is appropriate, and we'll do what we feel is best for our team.
Could I ask you about the trip to the White House tomorrow? Are the team really looking forward to it? And what about the guys that have been vocal about not wanting to go? Does that sort of take a shine off it?
Sure. I mean, I'd say we're honored and humbled to be extended the invitation to the White House. It's a great opportunity for the team to be recognized for the accomplishments of last season. I think we're respectful of players and their individual positions. Everybody has their own personal beliefs and feelings on it. So, but I think it's important. I mean, it's a great opportunity. There's some, you know, people have gone in the past. People haven't gone in the past. I mean, I think everybody's situation. I mean, I would say for my staff, you know, some guys haven't been before. So this is a great opportunity to be honored and rewarded for and recognized for the accomplishments of what the team did last year, which nobody can take away from us. So,
Nick, there's a controversial player in the draft, Joe Mixon, a very talented player who also has a public domestic violence situation. Just curious how you guys are handling a player like that this year.
Good question. I think each player, we kind of look at it on an individual basis, and I think Coach Belichick has talked about this multiple times. You're looking at the full composition of a player. So you try to gather, our job is to gather as much information as we can on a player on a variety of different levels. Take all that information, and then ultimately you make a decision about whether or not you draft a player, don't draft a player, okay, you would draft him at a certain point. So each player is different. You take all the information, and then you try to make the best decision that you feel is best for the organization. So case like that or other cases or other players that may be in a different bucket, you try to go through your same process and ultimately get to the same position, which is take the information, make the best decision that makes the most sense for the team and the organization.
I guess there's a report that said you guys didn't have him on your – took him off your draft board. Is there any validity to that?
Yeah, we grade every player. We evaluate every player. We assign a numerical value, and then ultimately we make a decision about what we're going to do with a player come draft day. So, I mean, part of it is, you know – I mean, that's for us to make that decision. You know, ultimately, we take the information and we try to make the decision that we feel is best for our team and organization.
You said a little bit earlier that you could pick a position and there's good players at that position in this draft. If this is an especially deep draft, does that make it easier for you guys to sit with your first pick as of right now at number 72, or would it make it more appealing to try to move up into that first or second round range?
I think any time you move up or down, it's usually player-driven and player-specific. So until you actually know what you're comparing and who you're comparing to, then it's hard to make that decision. So we've traded up, we've traded down, you know, so in the end, it's going to be player-driven. So you put the board together, you do a lot of comparisons, you know, vertically, horizontally, across positions. So then as you're sitting there, you're going, okay, well, we have some information that maybe this player could be in demand with some other teams. Okay, if we really like the player and we feel, you know, this is a player that we want, okay, can we trade? Okay, number one, is a team willing to trade? Number two, do you have enough capital to move if you want to make that move? So there are a lot of variables involved, and ultimately it's going to be player-specific and player-driven. And we're not going to really know until we're actually sitting there or kind of going through the draft once it gets started. So,
position that
last
you
question, guys.
Last question.
As a need on your roster, do you see any roles or positions that are points that need to be improved upon?
Yeah, I think our philosophy has always been we want to put good football players on our football team, so regardless of the position. We've kind of talked about in years past the Nate Solder example. You know, we had Matt Light, Sebastian Vollmer, and then we drafted Nate Solder in the first round. So, you know, do we need a tackle? I mean, I don't know, but, I mean, they jumbo tight end, and he played right tackle, which he'd never played before in his rookie year, so our job and our focus is try to get good football players, put them on the team, and once we get them, then we'll figure out what to do with them once we have them here. All right. Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.